Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
Toyota Brookhaven services all makes and models. That could be why we were voted best service department the past 2 years. Come see why. Exit 40 Brookhaven or online at toyotabrookhaven.com. Great service, great savings. At Toyota Brookhaven, we deliver.
From the trees over your head to the lawn you hate to mow and everything green in between, Garden Mama's here to help you keep on growing. Still the empress of everything green. Here's your horticulture maven, Garden Mama Nellie Neal, on Super Talk Mississippi.
You know, this has got to be one of my favorite songs. Good morning, Mississippi. Ken Hackman, the Birdman, filling in for Nellie again this morning. She'll be back with you next week, God willing, and the creeks don't rise. And I'm enjoying the chance to come in and speak with you this morning for the second week in a row. This is a new territory for me. We've never done back-to-back weekends before, Lance. I'm really excited about that. Have you got an update on weather for us this morning?
Of course. It is going to be a fun weekend here in Mississippi. We'll start out in the Delta, 40% chance of showers today, mainly in the afternoon. So, again, if you have folks out there have things to do in the yard and you need to mow today, you want to do that early. It's going to be around a 95 degrees on the heat, 106 heat index as it gets cranked up. So not a whole lot of wind. You do have a little bit of a breeze, 5 to 10 miles an hour. Tonight, about 20% chance of showers. That'll be later in the evening. And a low around 74. Tomorrow, 97. So hot. No real rain tomorrow. So if you want to wait it out and just get hotter, go ahead and wait till tomorrow. That's your delta right there. And then as far as Iuka, northeast corner, 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms, mainly between about 1 and 2 p.m. today, so shouldn't get you too wet. Nice, 91 degrees. The heat index is in.
Yeah, I knew that we were going to cool off.
Heat index isn't even posted, so it's going to feel about 91, 92 degrees. A little 5-mile-per-hour southwest wind, 30% chance of rain tonight, and mostly clear. And those thunderstorms probably happen in the later evening hours if you're up in the northeast corner. And then tomorrow, another hot day, no real rain to mention. But the heat index values tomorrow are going to creep up to 105. So if you've got some yard work, some things you want to do in northeast Mississippi today, probably best to do it today and, you know, save yourself a little bit of the worry in the heat. Diamond Head, showers and thunderstorms are likely mainly before 1 p.m. Partly sunny, high near 90, southeast winds around 5, 10 miles an hour. We got about 60% chance of the wet stuff today. Could equal up to about 3/4 of an inch. So nice little dumping if it comes down in the morning. So maybe it'll clear up a little bit this evening. But 10% chance of showers later tonight, partly cloudy. Around 76 degrees on the coast tonight. That ought to be beautiful.
Yeah. And, well, it's probably because of that system that was coming in, and thank heavens it looks like it's not going to develop into a tropical storm.
Makes a great sunrises and sunsets.
We've got some great pictures for those that
we
saw them.
New Ron, Mexico.
Yeah, Ron from Ocean Springs sent in some wonderful sunrise pics from New Mexico. We appreciate that. We've already got some texts coming in. Crepe myrtle, 45 plus years old. That's beautiful, crepe myrtle. I love that color. Here's a question. In North Mississippi, do hummingbirds migrate or live year-round here? Well, what you've got is migration, and we were actually going to be spending some time talking about migration this morning. For those of you that are paying attention to the hummingbirds, your numbers are picking up greatly. Here's the full story on hummers. They head to Central and South America to spend the winter. They come back, and typically, now we're seeing some changes to this because of the change in climate. But typically, March 4th is the date that we always look for the hummingbirds showing up on the coast for the first time. And you used to could just about guarantee that the first hummer sighting would be March 4th. Now that's changing a little bit. Temperature change across the world has had an effect on that. But just look for early March and have those feeders ready. And when they come through, they'll come through in a little burst, March and April. And then they have a tendency, and everybody calls me every year. We get this situation every year. People call and say, Ken, where's my hummingbirds? They just disappeared. I don't have any hummingbirds. Well, this happens every year. Unless you've got a feeder somewhere, or, I'm sorry, a nest somewhere near your yard, probably within a quarter of a mile. If you don't have a nest within a quarter of a mile, you probably will not see any hummingbirds in the summertime until we get to the 4th of July weekend. Right around the 4th of July weekend, the migration back to the south begins. And what happens is that they will stage down here. They'll all start heading south, and they kind of pile up here along our coastline and in North Mississippi, throughout Mississippi, really. They stage, and they'll be feeding on everything they can find. And we're going to talk about some plants for these hummingbirds in just a little bit. They'll feed on just about everything they can find. And then, of course, the numbers will start dwindling in October. But I tell you what, I have some exciting news for those of you in North Mississippi especially. Here's a note from someone that just saw three hummingbirds yesterday up in North Mississippi. That's fantastic. Got some news for you. There is going to be, I know folks were disappointed when Holly Springs stopped having their Hummingbird Festival. There is going to be a North Mississippi Hummingbird Festival on September 13th from 8 o'clock to 2 o'clock up there in South Haven. So I would Google North Mississippi Hummingbird Festival, South Haven, September 13, and get some information on that. I'm sure, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, one of the locations of one of those birding specialty shops up in South Haven is sponsoring that. And I'll go ahead and tell you, it's the South Haven Wild Birds Unlimited is sponsoring the North Mississippi Hummingbird Festival. And those of you up in that part of the state should really enjoy that. They've gotten gardens laid out, and it looks to be a fantastic festival set up. Quite a few speakers coming in, and they're trying to get a bird bander to come in and catch and band some hummingbirds, which is always fascinating. Holding one of those little babies in your hand is pretty unbelievable. Now, this is a caller-driven show. We want to talk to you. We want to find out what's going on in your yard. I want you to call and ask your questions. We've got several topics to cover here, but I want you to call and ask questions on what you would like to hear about or what's happening in your yard. The number to call is 888-808-8637. That's toll-free, 888-808-8637, or you can text us if you're not driving. That C Spire text line is 601-879-4395. That's 601-879-4395. We've already had a couple of texts come in this morning, and that's great. That's the way to get in touch with us and talk about what you want to talk about. And we are going to have a great time this morning. We're going to discuss some plants for hummingbirds. I want to talk about how to maximize the birds in your backyard. We're going to talk about different types of feeders and what we can get there. And we're going to talk about hummingbird mix. I'm a big proponent of not using, and listen to me out there, folks, this is important, do not use red food coloring. And I may make a few friends unhappy here with this one. I will not use hummingbird mixes. Those pre-prepared mixes that you just pour into water, I won't use those. They've got preservatives and all kinds of extra materials in them that I don't think are necessary. The very best thing to do is to buy sugar. And it's cheaper. It's a lot cheaper. All you need is sugar and water, 4 parts of water to 1 part of sugar. And realistically, you don't have to boil your water. That is not a real deal. Everybody thinks you have to boil your water. You don't have to boil your water. That's not a thing. And It's important to note that all you've got to do is mix it up. Now, I'll warm my water up. That makes it easier to mix, obviously. But that's not necessary. So we've got a question here. Ken, I know you fill in for Garden Mama. Do you have a regular show? I have an aunt that's a huge bird watcher. Thanks, Greg. Well, actually, Greg, and I don't know if I'm allowed to say this or not, I've been seriously thinking, now that I've retired, been thinking about talking to the boss folks here. I'll find out who's necessary to talk to and see if I can possibly, I don't know. It's still in the thought mode here. I may see about having my own. There are a couple of spots available, I think, that they have programming time. But coming up with sponsors and advertisers and all of that is a big, big responsibility. And I know Nellie spends a lot of time getting her sponsors and paying for the show. So, you know, things like this aren't quite free. And it's something that I've thought about, and I would love to have that opportunity to discuss it further if my wife and I decide in retirement here that I needed a little something to do more regularly. But thank you for that kind message, Greg. I appreciate it. Really, really love. Here's another caller that says, we need a bird show. Thank you. That's very kind. I'm not really... sure about all of that yet. We may pursue that. Another text, in the process of having bats removed from my attic, do you know their behavior after they've been removed? Do they hang around or do they move on? Well, if you are lucky enough, and I would have a bat house up, here's the thing with bat houses. If you have it, you may get the bats in it. If they're in your attic, they're used to that area, they're used to feeding there, make sure that the person that removes them from your attic fully seals the house. They're getting in somewhere, fully seals the house, finds that method of ingress and egress, and closes that off, but have a bat house ready that they can locate. And I would have it ready ahead of the moving time, if at all possible. If you're already in the process of having it done, get it up as soon as possible. It needs to be at least 15 feet up. It is best to put it on the house. If you've got an east-facing gable, mine is painted the same color as the house, and it's facing east. The second best option is to put it on a pole, like a telephone pole type something or anything like that, and put it up 15 feet. And your final option would be to put it up 15 or 20 feet in a tree, on the side of the tree. You're much better able to attract them if it is actually on the house. They are migratory. Some hang around and hibernate. Some move on. So there are various species of bats here in the state. And we may talk about having one of the heads of the Mississippi Bat Working Group on sometime. I'll see if I can work on having that happen at some point. Here's a question. Is it true that we need to need up the ratio of sugar and water? No, that's not necessary. I will say that sometimes people that want to attract orioles in addition to hummingbirds will go up to a 3-to-1 mix. It's not necessary to do that. Yes, the hummers do need a little bit more, but they're going to feed often enough to take care of themselves. They don't need you to bump it up. But that's an excellent question out there. here's another. Now, I am not going to advocate for canceling any other shows. There's a comment. We won't say which show. There's a comment up here that said, we need a bird show. Cancel another show. So, is it better to use distilled water if you are on city water? In Starkville, I don't know if it's any better. I will say that I like using distilled water. I don't have to worry about any additives, chlorine, fluorine, whatever is put in the water if you're on a city water. I don't think chlorine is that much of a problem. You know, that pretty much comes out of the water over a very short period of time. Chlorine does not stay in the water. It's chlorinated, but as soon as it's open, and it'll be fairly open out there in the feeder and in the open, that chlorine is going to evaporate and move out. It is technically a gas and is going to take care of itself like that. And here's another question. With a wet spring, do I have any insight on how successful the wild turkey hatch was this year? I'll tell you what, Jeff, I'm not a turkey hunter per se. I would love to go turkey hunting sometime, but I'm not a turkey hunter per se. I love to watch them more than anything else. I have not heard any information on how the turkey hatch was. I can certainly look that up. Now, I was supposed to look something up for someone last week, Lance, and I forgot to do that, and I'm terrible. I didn't write it down, and I don't remember what it was I was supposed to look up. If you will,
well, they'll let us know.
Okay,
Did you find the answer for us, Birdman?
Yeah, I can find the answer. I just need somebody to call. I think that was late in the show last time. Then Bubba in Starkville says, "When do the bats leave North Central Mississippi?" Well, I'll tell you what, that's a good question, and it depends on the species of bat that you have in your box. If you've got a single bat box up, you are most likely only going to have one species of bat in there. And it depends on whether it's a migratory species or a species that hibernates. But you're not going to see the bats in the wintertime. There's not anything out for them to feed on. And if they've got a nice nursery in there, if they've got a nice big bat house, and I love the 500 bat houses. Bat houses usually come in either a 300 or 500 size. Now, you know, let me mention this for those of you that are out there listening. A bat house that holds 300 bats is an amazing thing for your yard. I am a huge proponent that we need to stop spraying for mosquitoes and let the bats and the dragonflies, the frogs and toads, and the gambusia, which are the minnows that eat the larvae, I think we need to let them do their job. I just got back from a couple of weeks in Costa Rica, and I can tell you I did not get bit a single time while I was there. They don't spray. And the natural organisms that are meant to take care of them took care of them, and we didn't have to worry about a thing. Are they there? Yes, certainly. But so were the bats flying around, and we saw them every night flying around all over the lodges, and they are not a problem. Bats are not going to attack people. They don't swoop down and dive at your head. They don't swoop down and dive in your hair, no matter what you may have heard in the past. And the only time you have anything to worry about from a bat is if you find one sick on the ground. And in that case, all you have to do is call the wildlife officials. They'll come get it. It's free. They're not going to mess with you. You just need to leave that bat alone and let it sit there. Okay? We'll pick up and talk about more get out there and discuss some hummingbird plants. We've got a lot to talk about this morning. And, of course, we want you to talk. And here's a picture of a bat house simply put up. Okay? We're going to talk about a lot more this morning. Ken Hackman, the Birdman, filling in for Garden Mama this morning right here on Super Talk Radio.
Running a business is tough. If you're struggling with HR benefits and payroll, you're not alone. Many businesses just don't have the resources to keep up. That's where MWG Employer Services comes in. We provide a full range of employer services with everything from payroll to benefits to HR services and compliance, and can create a custom plan that fits your needs and budget. We're a Mississippi-based company that can help you focus on what you do best, growing your business. Call MWG Employer Services today at 601-206-7966 or go to MWG Employer Services. Homes.com.
Thinking about that big home project? In Mississippi, the law requires a licensed contractor for residential projects, including new home construction over $50,000. Home remodeling or improvements, including roofing over $10,000. All subcontractors performing residential, electrical, plumbing, or HVAC work on new home construction projects over $50,000 or home improvement projects over $10,000. Don't risk your investment. Visit msboc.us to verify a contractor's license.
Let my love open the door. Let my love open the door to your heart. Okay, good morning, everybody. I couldn't help myself there, Lance. I'm sorry. Ken Hagman, the Birdman, filling in for Garden Mama this morning, and we're having a wonderful time. The text line has lit up. Remember, this is your show, and we'd love for you to call in, ask your questions, or tell us what's going on in your yard. We've got several notes coming in here in just a second. The number to call to be on the air with me is 888-808-8637. That's a toll-free number, 888-808-8637. And, of course, the C Spire text line, not if you're driving. The C Spire text line is 601-879-4395. That's 601-879-4395. Keith in Kossuth has mentioned that his purple martens have just moved out on Thursday. He's got one pair left in his house or gourds. I'm not sure which he has there. And they are apparently waiting for their young to fledge, and then they'll probably be gone too. I know my my northern rough-winged swallows have left, and I've seen the purple martens around my house, but I haven't seen them anywhere near the nearby box. I have some more information for you on that North Mississippi Hummingbird Festival. It is being put on by the North Mississippi Hummingbird Festival at Snowden Grove Park. That's S-N-O-W-D-E-N, Snowden Grove Park in South Haven, Mississippi. And anyone can go. It's a public event, and I believe that's free, Saturday, September 13th. And just head on down to Snowden Park, Snowden Grove Park. That'll be the headquarters. I'm not sure exactly what their layouts will be, if they've got a tour of homes or whatever. I know my favorite event ever that I have ever been to was the Hummer Bird Celebration down in Rockport, Texas. If you've never seen 1,000 hummingbirds in one person's yard, you have not lived. Oh, my heavens, that's an experience that is just crazy. So Nathan in Smith County says he wishes the picture was better. We're going 35 on the water. You know what? I can't see the picture, but it looks like it's either a pelican or an osprey. Just from, can I make that bigger? Or can you make that bigger?
I think
I just
click on it.
I think it's a pelican from my point of view here. That's what it looks like. Ken in Jackson says, good morning. So happy that the snake plant has finally decided it's happy by adding more leaves. And the anthurium is doing pretty good, too. Now, it looks like that's inside. Ken, I tell you what, if you will put one of those on the outside during the months, that is a great plant. Snake plant is a fantastic plant to help out our green tree frog population. There's a lot going on in the need to protect our green tree frogs. They're being harmed a bit, especially in and around houses, by the presence of the Mediterranean house gecko that is going around. Good morning, says Bill in Poplarville. How much longer will the chimney swifts be around? They're going to be around for a good bit yet, feeding and doing that kind of thing. If they've already fledged from your particular location, you're not likely to see them coming back to the roost too much. They may continue coming back to the fireplace if you've got a fireplace. And I love that. I really, if I had a fireplace still, and you know what? I've got to check. I think we had to, because of the way things were done, I think we had to cap ours because squirrels were coming in. Now, that's normally not a problem if you live in a house where your fireplace is set up to your house. But our fireplace, we covered up with an entertainment system because we don't use the fireplace at our house. Both of us have allergies to smoke and really wouldn't be a great thing to have for us. So we closed it in. Unfortunately, the opening from the fireplace was still there, and squirrels came in and got through the walls and into the roof of the house, and it became quite a bit of a problem. We had that taken care of, though. But absolutely, if you've got a fireplace and you don't mind hearing the little chip-chip going on in your chimney, keep the cap off if you've got the opportunity to keep the cap off and let those chimney swifts have a home. Alternatively, you can build a chimney swift tower. I did find out that the book is no longer in print, How to Build a Chimney Swift Tower, a great book. If you contact me through the station or whatever, I will give you instructions on how to find that book. It is available on Kindle. For those of you that use Amazon Kindle, you can get the book on Kindle, but it is no longer in print. And the only paperback copy that I saw out there, you're going to love this. This book's only about 50 pages long. Little, tiny, thin paperback on how to build a chimney swift house. I saw one copy on eBay for $300. So people are wanting that book out there. And by the way, it disappeared. It was gone the next day. So, you know, there's some folks that really have, hey, says Nathan in Smith County, I leave mine in the chimney because I clean it every year. Plus, there's no bothersome insects. And that is absolutely true. I will tell you, I love purple martins, but a chimney swift is a much better mosquito eater than the purple martins are. Nathan also says that hummingbird festival would be a great reason to get away for a couple of days. I could visit the Palmer home being up there. You know, I have to look up and see. Write that down for me, Lance, if you don't mind, what the Palmer home is. I don't know what the Palmer home is. Do you know?
Definitely. Okay. Palmer home for children. That is, we do the radiothon every year, raised $360,000+ this
okay.
year. Had the first annual Paul Gallo Fund,
okay.
which is in his honor.
Yeah.
And we do that. It was a week and a half ago, maybe two. And so it's a whole super talk wide. Everybody jumps in. We have a full day. The phone lines are popping, and it's on. Obviously the work that the Palmer Home for Children, Drake Bassett and his amazing crew do.
Uh-huh.
You couldn't even go in. We don't have enough time to tell you everything they do. So,
okay.
But look up Palmer Home for Children if you don't know what they do. They've been around forever. Don't take federal government or government money. It's all private donations. And they're for children. You know,
Excellent.
Those that are in situations that are not ideal and sometimes in foster care and those types of things. Amazing outfit, heart of gold, and the outreach that, you know, we all strive to have in this world. They do it every day.
Excellent.
Amazing people.
Sounds good. So I did have one comment. Bubba, I don't know that I want to host a 7 o'clock in the morning show on a Saturday. That is, that's prime birding time for me. I like to be out there at the crack of dawn, and I can get a lot of birding done before 8 o'clock, and especially here in the summertime. In the wintertime, I'll get up in that early a time, and I'll be out all day long. Same for spring and fall.
Let me ask you a question. As you were talking about birding and getting up early, a great movie that I've seen a few times over the years is Falcon and the Snowman.
Mm-hmm.
And but I was doing a little research behind it just to understand the two individuals better, Chris and Dalton. And, you know, Chris was obviously a falconer. He became a master falconer before he was, you know, even in college. But growing up in the California area, and, you know, he was go out on these long expeditions to find, you know, falcons and prey birds, and then he would trap them, catch them, and then train them.
Mm-hmm.
I guess my question would be, we don't hear that much around anymore about falconry and that, but it's obviously an extremely high-end skill set.
Very high-end, and the birds.
And you get to get out and explore, do all kinds of stuff,
yeah.
But I guess have a few layers of question. In Mississippi, if you wanted to get into that, where would be the hotbeds of finding those birds? And two, how do you trap them without hurting them? And three, how would you you know, how do you house something like that?
Well, first of all, there is a Falconers group here in Mississippi, Mississippi Falconers. I'm not sure exactly whether they have a website. They probably have a Facebook page, I would guess. If you Googled Mississippi Falconers, you could find them. I will tell you this. It is a tremendously time-consuming activity. You have to spend hours a day with your bird. The other thing is, before you can ever go out and look, you've got to get a federal permit to be able to have a falcon. You've got to have a federal permit, a second one, to be able to trap a falcon. And you certainly could not go after a peregrine. You'd have to go after a more common species. And quite frankly, most of the falconers that I know aren't using falcons here in the United States. They're using Harris's hawks, red-tailed hawks, some of those that are more common. I would imagine in order to have a falcon in the United States, you would have to jump through a lot of hoops. It was more common in earlier days before we had protection for our endangered species, which was greatly needed, especially after the DDT period, where we just about wiped out the peregrine and several other birds, including our southern bald eagle. Southern bald eagles and peregrines were dropping in droves. They just couldn't reproduce with that DDT out there. That was a huge problem. Oh, wow. Marshall and Terry has a 36-page PDF. Lance, send me an email address for a chimney swift tower. And he has a 36-page PDF. I suppose I don't know how legal using the book is and copying that for PDF. We don't want to do anything illegal as far as that goes. We appreciate that. And Lance, we will send for that email address, but please let's make sure that that is not copyrighted material as far as legality goes. And I have a copy of the book. I've loaned it out to a lot of people. I've been very fortunate. That's one book that keeps coming back to me. I think once people build one, and I've got an Eagle Scout that is ready to build one right now, and that's how I've had the ones built that I've gotten built. We have three on the campus at Madison Central High School where I taught zoology for 29 years. For those of you that weren't here last weekend, I just retired, so the Birdman is able to get out and do a little bit more. Just retired last month from teaching, and I am a free man now. I don't know whether I'm enjoying that or not yet because school starts this next week, and I'll find out once it gets going how lonely I feel. I'm sure I'll find plenty to do. I already have so far, not lacking for things to do. In fact, I'm wearing my, for those of you that are seeing the live stream, I'm wearing my professional volleyball shirt. I'm leaving straight from the studio to go out and referee some volleyball matches today. So I'm trying to get involved and find things to do to fill up this retirement time, building a model railroad and that kind of thing.
Now, you're volleyball. Have you always had a zest for volleyball refereeing?
Oh, I've loved it. Yeah. Well, I refereed for several years now, probably about 15 to 20 years. Prior to that, I coached for 13 years. Nice, and I love the sport. It's fantastic.
I was, as a kid, we would have PE until you got into about seventh grade. And my favorite time in PE was when they would roll out the nets and we would play team volleyball.
Uh-huh.
As a, it wouldn't be like guys versus girls. You had guys, you know, and you had the PE class with the guys, then
right.
You had the girls. And I loved it. I was like, back then in the 80s, I was curious why it wasn't a more widespread sport. And then if you watch it in the Olympics, I mean, the crowds are huge.
Oh, they're massive.
Oh, massive.
Well,
and
when you see a ball moving 100 miles an hour, it'll do something to you. But I think the problem was that in our area, it was primarily church league or rec league, slappy batty ball, and people really didn't know the rules. And all of that started changing around the late 90s, we started really picking up with volleyball in the state. In the early aughts, 2000 through 2009, the sport really started picking up, and we gained some big, big advances. Okay, Andrea in Madison says, my
shirt
husband...
Shirt versus skins.
No, we can't do that.
That ain't
with,
legal.
It's girls volleyball. Hi, Ken, Andrea in Madison. My husband's hearing an oriole in the same oak tree he passes in the evening when he walks. Two orioles normally roost in the same place for a period of time. We have orchard orioles nesting right here in the Madison area. We have had Baltimore Orioles nest in Hinds County. I don't know of any nests in Madison County, but if they're in Hinds County, I would imagine that we have them in Madison County as well, Hinds being further south. They will hang around the same place when they find a source of food and nest there. I've had them nesting in my yard every year since 2001, and I enjoy my orchard orioles. They're beautiful, beautiful birds. They're not as bright orange as the Baltimore Oriole. They've got more of a burnt orange color, sort of like University of Texas. Stephen Ponitok says, what about crows? What about crows? We can talk about crows when we come back.
What is a group of crows called?
It's a murder.
There you go.
Yes, and if you only see two, it's attempted murder. Saw some fascinating frigate birds in South Florida last week. Yes, frigate birds are wonderful, and I've seen many of them. I just got back from Costa Rica, and they were everywhere there. LOL on the shirts and skins. Love that week we played in PE. Love volleyball. It's a great sport. Love birds. Give us a call at 888-808-8637, 888-808-8637, or the C Spire text line, 601-879-4395. That's 601-879-4395. Ask your questions. We'll put you on Super Talk Radio.
Propane heats and lights up our life, but being propane safe is vital to our peace of mind. Protect your loved ones with professional installation and propane inspection. Don't cut corners by having a family friend install. Contact your propane provider and stay safe. Visit mspropane.com. That's mspropane.com to learn more about the many uses of propane. That's mspropane.com. Energy for everyone. Propane.
When it comes to returning money to Mississippians, Treasurer David McRae is on a roll. He's already returned hundreds of millions of dollars in unclaimed money to Mississippians through the Treasury's Unclaimed Money Program. Now he's refocused the state's college savings initiatives, MAX and IMPACT, to emphasize technical, trade, and teacher-focused careers, jobs, and skills Mississippi needs. Don't let another day go by without getting a jumpstart on a career or getting back the money that's yours. Visit Treasurer David McRae, treasury.ms.gov.
The best made...
And we're back here on Super Talk Radio. Ken Hagman, the Birdman, filling in for Garden Mama this morning. She'll be back next week. And I really have enjoyed spending these last 2 weeks with you folks. And hope y'all have enjoyed it as well.
It's been too long. I mean, I was so happy. When she told me it was going to be two, I was like, yes, we get to see Ken for two times. And I told you this story once before, and it was probably a couple years ago. And I wanted to, I couldn't really remember what you said or if I even asked the question, but it was more of a funny story. I had to be probably 10 or 11, and I was walking through the woods in our neighborhood, which we had a lot of great woods and stuff. And at that era, it was the 80s, and you know, people were building a house, and it wasn't like it is now where 100 of them went up at one time.
Right.
You know, so there'd be scrap piles, and you know, you'd say, hey, can I take the scraps? We're building a fort. And, oh, sure, man. You know, you got to know everybody doing everything. So I had a little fort built down there in a ditch kind of back behind, you know, this house and in the neighborhood. And it was kind of communal. And I remember I was headed over to it and I was walking through the woods and all of a sudden this beautiful woodpecker just fell out of the sky and landed right in front of me. And I thought, you know, I'd heard it pop, 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 pop as I was coming into the woods. And then I probably from me to you, 20, 30 feet, it just fell right in front of me. So I walked up to it, and I thought it was dead. And it's this beautiful beautiful, big, huge woodpecker. I'd never seen one that close. And, you know, I'm mesmerized by this thing. And so I picked it up and I took it over to the house thinking maybe, you know, it was dead. I was probably going to put it in a shoebox and name it and bury it or something.
Yeah.
And we had a little graveyard of pets. And I had a big old shoe, had a big foot even back then. And I'd put a nice towel in there and I laid it in there and, you know, where he was just kind of looking straight up. And I just was absolutely blown away at how pretty this bird was. I didn't tell my mom or dad. I went back to my bedroom with it. And I was had it sitting on my bed. I think I like left to run up to the front for something, you know. And I come back and the bird's awake. Now, there's probably a 30-minute time span that's
yeah.
gone from me picking it up to getting it to the bedroom. And it's flying around the bedroom, having a big time. And so without
rich.
Telling the parents or anything, I had to go take the screen off the window, open the door, and it finally found its way out. But my question would be, is that happen? Do woodpeckers knock themselves out? They work so hard?
They shouldn't knock themselves out from drumming. If one is trying to escape a hawk or something of that sort, I would imagine it's possible for one to bump into a tree or bump into some other substance out there. Their skull is specially designed to absorb the way that they hammer on things. I really don't have a clue how that happened.
Yeah.
I will tell you this, though. Usually, a lot of times if a bird – it's more common with window strikes, of course. But if a bird hits a window or something like that, you can hold it, and usually it'll come around if it's not dead,
yeah.
If it didn't break its neck. It'll come around for a little while. But there's often internal damage that's done either to the brain or to the body. And a lot of times they'll pick up and fly off, and then they pass away, unfortunately, out in the woods somewhere. But you can always give it that chance. There are people that recommend if you find one to get it to a bird rehabber if it wakes back up. And there are numbers. I can get those numbers to anybody that wants to have them. Here's a text from someone that says, "Hi, some of my bird books indicate that goldfinches are permanent residents in North Mississippi but are seen here in the winter. Also, why are painted buntings hard to see here in central Mississippi? Haven't seen one since the 60s. You need to call me because I know where the painted buntings are.
I was going to say, Paul Gallo was a absolute lover of the bunting. I remember one morning getting in here. He says, "You know what the prettiest bird in the whole world is?" I
yeah.
said, "No, I do it like a mallard or..." No, we're not talking about that. And so I'd guess three or four times, and he always liked playing with me early in the morning. And then he sent me a picture of one that he had on his bird cam. And I was "What in the world is this thing? Was this like in Costa Rica or something?" He
yeah.
said, "No, that's my backyard." And he loved the painted bunting, though. And anytime you mention or anyone says the painted bunting, I have great memories of Paul Gallo and his love for the bird.
Yeah, he had me on the show several times talking about birds. And I tell you what, that painted bunting is a gorgeous bird. Give me a call and we can – I don't want to use the term hook up, but we'll get together. We'll get together and I'll take you and show you some painted buntings. They are absolutely –
What is the habitat that is most for like nesting in their life before? Or they branch out and go do stuff.
They like grassland succession areas, and if it's got good native grasses, tall grasses, in a succession area that has been cut over, that's their favorite areas here, at least in central Mississippi. And I've got several of those that I have staked out. I watched one pair. Actually, there were multiple pairs in there. But I watched at least one pair nest in the same general locality within, say, several hundred yards of each other every year for probably 16 or 17 years. My favorite honey spot I haven't been to yet this year, and it's probably getting a little late to see them there. Probably as late as it is, late July like this, they still sing pretty much all day long. They're a bird that does not mind singing all day long as long as they're still on territory. Once it gets a little bit cooler, they're going to be gone. But I tell you what, if you really want to see painted buntings, just give me a holler and we'll go out there. Here comes the image. That is directly the exact same image that I have in my my textbook that I teach from or taught from, I've got to get used to saying taught. Oh, my heavens, this is going to be hard. That exact image is in my Integrated Principles of Zoology textbook. Great picture of the hummingbird tongue. If you can get, can you get that up on the screen?
Yeah, it takes a minute to move stuff over. I had a question there regarding the bunting before we moved on. Now, it's a member of the cardinal family. How it doesn't look anything like a cardinal.
No, but it is a finch.
Okay.
Cardinals are finches. Buntings are finches. Goldfinches are finches. And we had that question about the goldfinches, and I don't think I ever got around to it.
And then, too, my last is, so it says, and I remember reading this before, that the colors only show up in the second year for the male.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, they're green. They're green like the female when they're.
I was going to ask you.
Yeah. And that's something to see, a beautiful green female painted bunting. It's probably the only green bird that truly green bird that I can think of that frequents Mississippi. And you've got some birds that are close to that with the olive green of the orange crowned warbler, but this is a true green. And I was out shooting, of course, with a camera. I was out shooting one day with a professor from Mississippi College, and green female painted bunting landed on the middle of this little area where I told you I had this honey spot. It was an old abandoned road that was shut off from public use. And I said, watch her and get your camera on her. Something's about to go down. And sure enough, within 5 seconds, a male came down and we sat and watched them copulating for maybe about 5 to 10 seconds, and Frank was able to squeeze off several shots. It was Frank Hensley from Mississippi College, biology professor over there, was able to squeeze off several shots, and he got some good ones of the painted buntings mating, the beautiful green female with the other on top of him. The goldfinches are permanent residents in North Mississippi. They're there all year long. I've got goldfinches not in my yard, but I've got goldfinches staked out in Madison County. There are a couple of sunflower fields where they are found. Real quick, 30 years ago, I owned a mobile home that had a wood-look siding, but it was metal.
I love that.
Woodpecker
one.
Would serve as an alarm clock. Well,
ding, 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 ding.
What he was doing was drumming territory.
Yeah.
Not exactly declaring your alarm in the morning. We've got a couple of things. There's a beautiful picture of a ruby-throated hummingbird. And Liz says she's seen indigo buntings in Alabama. The indigo bunting is a beautiful blue bird, and they're wonderful. Remember to give us a call this morning at 888-808-8637. We haven't talked to anybody yet this morning, Lance. That's 888-808-8637. Or text us on the C Spire text line, 601-879-4395. Ken Hackman, the Birdman, filling in for Garden Mama this morning on Super Talk Radio.
Hey there, homeowners. Sammy the Shovel here with an important message from Mississippi 811. Internet fiber expansions are being added, making it more important than ever to know exactly where your utilities lie when digging on your property. Whether it's simple landscaping or a large project, you need to call 811 at least 3 working days before you dig. Even with laws in place, safety is in your hands. Do the right thing and call 811 every dig, every time. You dig?
We are the people, Mississippians. We are the land, growing food, fiber, and timber. We are there when you need us, from the roof over your head to the food on your table. We are small town, but big moments, your next door neighbors. We are the Mississippi Farm Bureau Federation. 100 years and counting. Become a member today at msfb.org.
From the trees over your head to the lawn you hate to mow and everything green in between, Garden Mama's here to help you keep on growing. Still the empress of everything green. Here's your horticulture maven, Garden Mama Nellie Neal, on Super Talk Mississippi.
And And good morning once again, Mississippi. This is Ken Hackman, the Birdman, filling in for Garden Mama this morning. I've enjoyed being with you these 2 weeks, and Nellie will be back next week so that you can enjoy having her back, and I know everybody will be glad to hear her voice again. We've got a caller on the line.
Billy has some comments about purple martins. Billy, why don't you hop on here? The Birdman is ready to go. Uh-oh, turn that radio down, Billy.
Okay.
There we go.
I live over here in Clinton, but I'm from North Mississippi. And I have a farm up there, and we live in Clinton. But on the farm there, I have two bird martin house racks of gourds and everything. And I still have martins Thursday. In mass up there. We're talking about the migration and everything, and they usually leave up there around the 1st of July, but I've still got them here now, almost the end of July.
Yeah. There's some strange things going on with migration. Go ahead, Billy.
Again?
I said there's a lot of strange things going on with migration these days. With the temperature changes.
I guess part of it is the weather changes is affecting them. I've hunted all my life. Started off with quail till we ran out of them in Mississippi. And I ended up a chronic turkey hunter. And I'm now 87, though. I'm out of turkey hunting and all of that. And I really enjoy the birds.
Well, I'm glad you do, Billy.
I have bird feeders everywhere, and I'd be one of the first ones to vote for you to be on there weekly, Ken.
Well, thank you. That's very kind of you. We appreciate your call, Billy. Thanks for giving us a buzz. And I did want to take some time to talk about some of the great plants that you can plant for hummingbirds. And I am a big fan of the salvias. We're going to keep a look at that text line. Remember, if you want to have your comments or questions, just give us a call at 888-808-8637. Billy wins the prize for being the first call of the day. And it's awful late for that first call to come in. Y'all give us a call.
Good text line. Yeah. You know, I've learned over the years, it's our listeners have gotten very
used to texting.
Used to the
yes.
text line. We'll get a call, but it's 10 to 1, 20 to 1.
Wow.
And that's on the low end.
You know. Yeah, I guess it's been since I haven't been in for a while. I'm used to having so many more calls. I want to talk a little bit about some of these plants for hummingbirds. I'm a huge fan of Lanicera sempervirens, which is called coral honeysuckle. And even better than that, I love my salvias. Now, that Lanicera sempervirens, that coral honeysuckle, is just absolutely beautiful all summer long. But in the springtime, when it first blossoms, you will have a mass of red blooms like you have never seen before. It is absolutely gorgeous. Lance, I don't know how hard it is for you to Google and find a picture of coral honeysuckle, Lanicera sempervirens, and pop that up on the screen for those that are watching on the live stream. But I want to talk about the salvias. Salvias like Salvia greggii, that cherry sage. Now, I had Salvia greggii. I had it on the south side of the house to keep it away from the north winds. And I had Salvia greggii blooming in various years. It bloomed throughout every single month of the year that I had blossoms on it. It is hardy enough that it will actually form woody trunks and bushes if you take care of it and mulch it well and take care of it. It'll last all year round, go right through the year, and I have had blossoms in December and January and February during different years. Now, I don't know what changes in temperature are going to do. I guess I need to get some more of that in the ground and see what happens to it since I've moved to the other house. Salvia vanhoodii is a great, great salvia for late summer and early fall. It'll last through the hummingbirds, that's for sure. It's got a deep wine color. It is absolutely gorgeous. Salvia coccinea, of course, everybody's familiar with a variety of those, including pineapple sage and some of the others. I love coccinea. I love to use salvias to develop layers and different textures. One of the great textures is Salvia lucantha, the Mexican bush sage, and that one is just absolutely wonderful with its velvety grayish-green leaves and the beautiful purple blossoms. It's a great plant. Salvia madrensis, a great big, tall salvia. There's a look on the live stream screen at coral honeysuckle, Lanisera sempervirens. You can imagine a bush just entirely covered with that. That's not too bad, that shot right there, Lance. I wish I had a shot with me that I could send to you of my former patch that I had to leave behind. It is a fantastic flowering plant for the hummingbirds. That may be after the spring bloom when it is just normal blooming, that picture that's up there right now. It's a gorgeous, gorgeous plant. Salvia madrensis, as I was talking, that's a bright yellow salvia. Gets very tall. And then the tallest one that I like is a pale blue, and that's Salvia uliginosa, also called bog sage. Bog sage, B-O-G, and it likes wet feet a little bit, but I tell you what, you can put all of those in the yard at one time. There is a fantastic book out there that I recommend, and that is The Book of Salvias by Betsy Klebsch. And that's C-L-E-B-S-C-H, Betsy Klebsch. And it's a fantastic book. Here's a question. I'm new to bird feeders. What is the best kind of bird seed to put in a feeder out at the reservoir? Well, Liz, the best kind is the kind that brings the most birds to you. Now, I personally recommend black oil sunflower. That is the best overall seed, is a good quality black oil sunflower. And I get mine down at Wild Birds Unlimited. I know that there's not going to be a trash in it.
LaFleur's Gallery, right?
Yeah, LaFleur's Gallery Shopping Center there in Jackson. They've got quite a bit of seed, and they've got the best quality that I know of in the area. That's the only place I go to get my seed personally. And then, of course, if you're trying to keep away the squirrels, I love safflower seed. Squirrels and blackbirds won't eat it. It's more expensive. I'm going to be honest with you. It's more expensive, but you actually end up saving money. There's a good shot of that Salvia uliginosa, the bog sage that I was talking about. For those of you that are watching in on the live stream, that's a great look at one. I hadn't been paying attention to the screen up there, and Lance is just popping these beautiful pictures up to describe some of the... Did you find Salvia vanhootii?
I was trying to get it all done. You're moving quick for me.
Good morning, guys. Paula from Dentville says, good morning, Paula. Glad to have you listening in this morning. We've got a video here. Let me see if I can see this. It's hard to get videos here on the screen. I can see a pond. I couldn't make out what was on the pond, though. We'll go through that again. It looked like there was something running in the background. Was that a deer?
I have no idea.
It's kind of hard to see. No, maybe ducks flying away or turkey flying away. Kind of hard to tell. But thanks for sending that in. So, Mr. Birdman, I live in a really busy neighborhood close to a busy highway. Want to find a place to go birdwatching. Living in Star, Mississippi. Paula, get a couple of friends together. I don't mind taking you myself, but I will be glad to take you. Sometimes people are a little concerned about going out with a single guy if you're a single female. I'm not a single guy. I'm happily married to a most gorgeous woman. My wife is unbelievable. I was told yesterday, I was at we're having the Central Mississippi Volleyball Association camp for referees to get recertified every year. And one of the ladies I ran into, one of the officials, one of the state board members, ran into her at one of the local big stores, club stores, I guess I can say Sam's or Costco or something like that. And she didn't want to say anything because she thought I was with a younger woman. My wife is so beautiful, people don't believe that she's close to my age. We won't talk about ages on here, but she's a gorgeous woman, and nobody believes that she's her actual age. But I'll be glad to take you out bird watching. Leave your information with Lance, Paula, and I will, or just text it in there, and I will definitely get in touch with you.
Well,
and
if you can catch Paula when she's not working, then you're doing good. So yeah, she's a hard working lady, amazing. Uh-huh. And she takes care of those things that we consider humans, those pets.
Uh-huh.
And so she's probably busy as a beehive today, shearing booties on those babies. And but she's the best at it.
Oh, well, so I may have to get her number. My daughters have a pair of poodles that always need taken care of.
She's gentle, but yet she knows how to get those dogs to behave.
This is a great question from Mary. Mary texted in and says she knows it's not the cleanest picture, and I think there's a really good pun there, Mary, if you're ready to laugh at it. There has been a female cardinal pooping on my car for 3 weeks. Why does she look at herself in my car mirrors and windows? Well, what happens is when birds have territories, I'm going to tell you that particular bird has a nest nearby somewhere, and they will fight against any other bird of their species that comes into that area to keep them away. That's her territory. And what she's seeing is her reflection on your mirrors. And she will fight that reflection. It's also happening in people's windows at their houses. I had one all spring and early summer. Thankfully, it has stopped. We had a towhee, an eastern towhee, that's nesting in the bushes in my front yard. Y'all, I've got so many birds nesting in my yard. My favorite mantra, and I'm going to say it again, we didn't say it a lot today, Lance, but said it quite a few times last week. If you build it, they will come. You can easily make your yard a bird haven. All you got to do is put out the right stuff. But Mary, she's just fighting her own reflection. My towhee fought her reflection for quite a while. The only problem is you got to make sure she stays on those eggs and whatnot. It's a good thing if you have that happening. You could always wrap something around the mirror and then pick it off when you need to get in your car and take off somewhere, and that would stop that from happening. It's not good for them, really, because they're going to keep fighting it and wearing themselves out. It can cause a little trouble.
No, it's not vanity, though.
No. Not at all. Here is Jake Pettigrew. He says, winter feeders are the best. I had a black-throated hummingbird this February. I'm up to 6 species this year. Not all on mine, but it shows if you put them out, they will come. And that's exactly what I just got finished saying. How about that? Thanks, Jake, for that. I'm going to assume you're on a coastal county there if you've got 6 species in 1 year. Those coastal counties are really, really lucky because some of those Mexican species and Western species find the temperatures in our coastal counties to be really, really mild and very similar to their summer temperatures, and especially those high montane species. Jake, I think I recognize your name from somewhere. You may be on the Miss Bird list or email list or something of that sort, aren't you? And Jake used his, I don't know if you notice this, Lance, if you look at the text line, Jake used the appropriate four-letter banding code for the black-throated hummingbird, and that is that's a fantastic bird to have.
I thought we were talking about natural gas there for a second. BTHUs. That's a black-throated hummingbird.
Absolutely. Every bird is given a four-letter code, and they've had to be created with some of them, but most of the time, and give everybody a little hint out there. Most of the time, if it's a two-name bird, like let's just say Northern Mockingbird, to give something that's really easy for everybody, they take the first two letters from Northern and the first two letters from Mockingbird, and you get NOMO, N-O-M-O. Northern Cardinal is N-O-C-A. It gets a little more difficult when you have a bird with multiple letters, like multiple names, like black-throated hummingbird. So they took the first letter from black, which is B, the first letter from throated, which is T, and then the H-U for hummingbird. And that's how they come up with the four-letter banding codes. It's a little difficult sometimes because we've got some really exotic birds in parts of the world, and the banding codes started in the Western world. So some of of those eastern birds over in Asia and whatnot have some really interesting banding codes, but they're all given a four-letter banding code, and it's pretty amazing that works out the way that it does. And I tell you, if you've never been banding birds, it is the most wonderful experience to hold one of those babies in your hand and then collect the data for it and then eventually release it back into the wild. And I tell you, I was fortunate to do that with Bob Sargent for many, many years, and good friend, and may he rest in peace. Bob is the actual author of the Ruby-Throated Hummingbird, a book called The Ruby-Throated Hummingbird. You can still find it out there, Bob Sargent, and that's a great book, everything you want to know about ruby-throated hummingbirds. I want to spend a little bit of time talking about the fact that August is right around the corner, and that's going to be the peak of shorebird migration. So if you've got mudflats in your area, love to go to the pits up just south of Memphis and see the shorebirds up there. Along the coast, those of you that are down there get the opportunity to do some good shorebirding. I tell you, the group from Delta Windbirds has worked really hard and worked with catfish farmers to draw down their ponds in a rotation, and has created mudflats in the Delta. And a lot of shorebirds stop over in those mudflats in the Delta. You can do some really, really good shorebird watching, and that's a great thing. I want to remind everybody, give us a call. We still have another half hour to go plus, and that number is 888-808-8637. That's a toll-free call, 888-808-8637. Or you can reach us on the C Spire text line, which is what most folks are doing this morning. That's 601-879-4395. Please don't text and drive. 601-879-4395. And we'll answer your questions and talk to you right here on the Weekend Gardening Show. Garden Mama's out, but Ken Hackman, the Birdman, is here for you right here on Super Talk Radio.
Thinking about that big home project? In Mississippi, the law requires a licensed contractor for residential projects, including new home construction over $50,000, home remodeling or improvements, including roofing over $10,000. All subcontractors performing residential, electrical, plumbing, or HVAC work on new home construction projects over $50,000 or home improvement projects over $10,000. Don't risk your investment. Visit msboc.us to verify a contractor's license today. A message from the Mississippi State Board of Contractors.
From the seed and the soil grows row after row. We take care of this land using just the right amount of our natural resources and never more than we need.
We are only one of thousands, but we are united as one to grow the food, fiber, and shelter you need every day. Because Mississippi needs us. Mississippi needs farmers, the farm families of Mississippi.
For a flipping good time.
And we are back, Mississippi. Ken Hackman, the Birdman, here, filling in for Garden Mama. And we're having a good time this morning. We've still got another half hour to go, and that's exciting because we get to talk to you. Several people out there listening. I've got to give a personal shout out. Those of you that know me know that I love birding, and I love to get out and go bird watching. And I've had a little bit of trouble lately because my vision has changed a little bit. And I had the most wonderful opportunity to go in, and I can't give an an advertisement for this, but one of those big stores that we were talking about earlier has an optical department, and I went in and I got to see a person that was just absolutely phenomenal. I got two pairs of glasses for an unbelievable price, and she was so much more meticulous than anybody else I've ever been to, and her name is Jess. Jess, if you're out there listening, thank you for helping me to see better so that I can go birding and have a better time. That is it, just the greatest thing in the world is to have your eyes in the best shape. And, you know, that's something that we all need to do is take care of our eyes and our vision and make sure that we have glasses. And to mention that, I'll tell you, the Lions Clubs of our state do an awful lot to help out people and test for vision screening. They go to the public elementary schools and do vision screening in our area. I know, and I am a member of the Madison Lions Club, does a lot of work here in the central part of the state. Great organization. If you are interested in joining a group that really serves your community, look for your local Lions Club. It's a great, great thing to have. I wanted to talk a little bit, hope I'm still talking about bats. I finally got a bat house up. Not a perfect place, according to instructions online, but as close as possible. It's been up about 2 months. When will I know if I have any bats? Thank you. Well, you can watch in the evening and see if they come out. That looks like it might be just a tad low. If it's on the side of your house, I like to put mine up on a gable facing east. I will say that's a nice looking bat house. I like that. Hope that it's that's rather decorative. I'm not used to seeing the decorative ones. We like 15 feet to be about the minimum for placing a bat house, and I hope that that one's going to work out for you. You really won't know. I have seen bats move into bat houses as soon as 2 or 3 days after it's been put up, and I've seen people where it took them years to get bats. It is not the easiest thing in the world, but to help yourself out, you can place the bat house at least 15 feet in the air if possible. Facing east, you don't want them to get that southern sun. It's really hot, but they do need that good morning sunrise sun. So I like to have a bat house facing east, at least 15 feet off the ground. I love that. That's very decorative and beautiful. I haven't seen any like that before. I'd love for you to text back and let us know where you got it. And of course, it's very important if you make a bat house not to stain the bat house. The stains can leak through the wood and leach in and cause trouble for the pups as they are nursing. So you want to stay away from stains. Painting is good. I hope that's just natural wood. If that's stained, then you might have some problems. But it is a beautiful, beautiful piece there. And I really, really like that. Maybe Lance can get that up on the screen if it works out. But two things to check. Number one, height. And I would definitely make sure it's not stained, that it's more of a natural wood. Staining can cause some problems. Now, you could go in and seal that with something that was non-toxic. If you could get a non-toxic polymer on the inside of it or something of that sort, that would help out and prevent them. But you do have to leave it rough on the inside so that the little pups and the bats can hang on to something. Those are built with very specific needs on the inside, and they've got to have some toe holds for the bats to hang on to with their back legs and their front legs. A lot of people won't realize bats fly with their fingers. What all do I need to take with me to go bird watching is a question. Well, I always have my binoculars. Now, I am pretty serious about things. I carry along a spotting scope, and I will carry a field guide with me. I don't often have it in my hand unless I need to refer to it. A lot of serious birders will carry one in maybe a pack on their side or something of that sort. But we typically don't need to refer to it that often. If you're a beginning birder or an intermediate birder, you may want to have that really readily available so that you can look things up very quickly. And I hope that, Paula, you're able to get some feeders up. We meant to talk about feeders this morning, and I was going to talk about the various types of feeders. If you want to maximize what you've got out there, you need a tray feeder down low for the ground feeding birds like your finches. That's how you'll get the painted buntings and the indigo buntings, the gold finches. Cardinals will prefer to be down there, but they will also go up to the seed feeders. They're a little bit larger. The suet feeder is great to bring in chickadees and nuthatches and titmice and woodpeckers. I love suet feeders for a lot of the small birds. Suet feeders will also bring in warblers during the spring and summer, and it's wonderful to get those beautiful, beautiful warblers at your feeder. I love the cylinder feeders for the larger birds, and you can get squirrel-resistant feeders if squirrels were a problem. I would just prefer to use the rather than spend the money on the big squirrel feeder, I'd rather use the safflower. But you've got to use safflower carefully. I like to blend safflower and sunflower together and then wean it in slowly as you go. Wean the black oil out and leave the safflower in. Start with a 50-50 mix and go with that for a couple of weeks, then switch to 60-40, go with that for a couple of weeks, and slowly blend out that that sunflower and leave safflower there. Safflower is not a common seed for our birds, and they don't take to it unless they're, you know, given that in the beginning. Jess, the store that shall not be named. That was so awesome. Thank you. Really enjoying the show, trying to talk my husband into a bat house. Oh, Jess, tell you what, get your phone number to me, and I'll talk your husband into the bat house. That's not a problem at all. It's an easy thing. I'm glad you're listening. That makes me happy. Lance at telesouth.com. And we've got that on there. Why? If you need to get information, you can email lance@telesouth.com if you want to get information to me. Paula, that would be a way for you to get in touch with me. I used to put my phone number out, my personal phone number out on the air, and I would get so many calls, and I still get a lot of calls, that my wife said, please don't put your phone number out there for everybody. We've got a caller on the line.
John from Northwest Alabama, he has a couple. He's the one that sent the video and the green-throated hummingbird as well. That video was, he walked upon a crane out there.
Oh.
Yeah, and so, but John, you are on with us now. Thanks for the call.
Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome, John.
I sent that video. It was a crane I walked up on. I don't know what type. That's why I wanted to identify it. But that thing stood about waist high. It was some kind of like kingfisher crane or something in the pond there. And I literally got that close to him before he flew off there. And it was an amazing sight right there.
Right.
But the reason I called was I was wanting to tell you listeners that if you want to see them red-headed woodpeckers, I had dried peanuts in their shell in the tree where you hang your bird feeders from with the seeds, you know, the sunflower seeds.
Right.
If you had peanuts in their shell dried, them red-headed woodpeckers will come and look for them and dig them out of the bark or wherever you can stick them in between the tree limbs there and stuff. And if you ain't been there in a while, they will return looking for these peanuts. And it's amazing to sit there in the mornings and watch them jokers search for them peanuts all throughout that tree.
Yes, I tell you what, Lance, if you could find that shot that I gave you last week and of my pine tree in the backyard, I actually, John, put up it was a living pine tree, and I actually cut the top out of it and took off all the branches and left about 30 feet standing in my backyard. And I tell you what, it's been a massive, massive, wonderful tree. I've got red-headed woodpeckers nesting in it. Eastern bluebirds came in and nested in the red-headed woodpecker's cavity from last year. So we've got two species already in there. And then, you know, peanuts in feeders. Peanut feeders are very common at those specialty shops like Wild Birds Unlimited, both in Jackson, and there's a Wild Birds Unlimited up in South Haven. I don't know of any other birding specialty shops in the state will be glad to mention them. Got a text from Matt that says he's been listening to the show this morning talking about birding. But, John, I tell you what, you're absolutely right. They do love peanuts, and they'll go to them either in the shell or out of the shell. It doesn't matter which one. It's cheaper to buy them in the shell, of course, but you're not getting as many nuts that way because of the air and whatnot involved. But that's a great, great comment to make, John. We appreciate you calling in with that one because those red-headed woodpeckers are gorgeous. You need a good stand of pine somewhere nearby to pull them in, but they're a fantastic woodpecker. I think the red-headed woodpecker or the ivory-billed, not the ivory-billed, Dane Bramage, the red-headed woodpecker or the pileated woodpecker are my two favorites, and they're just beautiful, beautiful birds. Thanks for calling in. We appreciate that. this is his wife. I can ask him. I need help with the owl boxes. Wood duck boxes, what dimensions are you using? Okay. Owl
that
boxes.
That was me. The green is me.
Okay. Okay, so this is Mike from Lamar County. Several small owls around the house. They have a low coo. Yes, you're talking about eastern screech owls, and they're really, really easy to build a house for them. Make sure when you build a house for a screech owl, you get the right dimensions. There are plenty of information sources online to build those. Make sure you leave drainage in the bottom and ventilation in the top for those guys. Love wood duck boxes. They've done really well. I like eastern red cedar or western red cedar.
The most wood ducks you could ever imagine. Yeah. In Issaquena. It's a nesting ground, I guess. It's a pretty tight, long bayou, probably 5 miles long. And it's very narrow cedars everywhere. But sitting on the island in between the big lake and that, as they come in at roost time, and I'll just sit there and watch them
come in.
And there's millions.
Yes.
And so I've been wanting to put some boxes in that area. And I guess my question would be, what is the point, you know, of the wood duck box? Is that going to be a place for them to have their young and such?
Yes, okay. Yes. So here's the issue. And it goes back to what we've talked about with chimney swifts needing places to nest. So wood ducks naturally nest in old pileated woodpecker holes. And with the loss of the ivory-billed woodpecker, assuming they're extinct, possibly they may still be around. There are some intriguing possibilities over the last couple of decades. But with the loss of that and the drop in the number of pileated woodpeckers, and of course just the drop of stands of forest in general, wood ducks don't have as many places to nest as they used to. So wood duck boxes have become very, very popular, especially near water or in water. A lot of people like to build them in the water themselves. You got to do it when the water's down low or something of that sort. I've never actually put one in the water. I've tried to put them on little islands or little hummocks in the water, things of that sort. I'm embarrassed to say that my father-in-law lives next door to me and has a good-sized pond, and I have not put one up there, and I really should.
How many per, in other words, if you've got millions, you know, or hundreds of thousands, what would be a good number?
If the pond is large enough, if the lake is large enough, I think you could put up several within, you know, say 100 feet of each other. The last natural box that I saw, not box, last natural cavity I saw was about 60 feet up in the air. Mm-hmm. And if you get on YouTube or just Google wood duck babies leaving tree, not wood duck box, but tree. There are some videos out there of wood ducks and mergansers.
I love mergansers.
Jumping
the
out,
is my favorite.
And those little babies take that first hop, and it's 60 feet down to the ground, and they'll bounce around across bushes and tree limbs that are sticking out and everything else, and watching that is just fantastic. Paula from Dentville sent us some pictures of her beautiful coast and picture of a wood duck house on Lake Copiah. Paula, that's great. Really good. We're talking about birds and gardening for birds right here on Super Talk FM. Send us a text question at 601-879-4395 or call us and talk on the air, 888-808-8637. Ken Hagman, the Birdman, filling in for Garden Mama here on Weekend Gardening on Super Talk Radio.
Propane makes your house a home through the many propane products that are offered. Furnaces, water heaters, fireplaces, clothes dryers, generators, grills, stoves, ovens, and ranges. Clean, efficient energy. Propane. Energy for everyone. Propane. Learn more at mspropane.com. That's mspropane.com.
Hey there, homeowners. Sammy the Shovel here with an important message from Mississippi 811. Internet fiber expansions are being added, making it more important than ever to know exactly where your utilities lie when digging on your property. Whether it's simple landscaping or a large project, you need to call 811 at least 3 working days before you dig. Even with laws in place, safety is in your hands. Do the right thing and call 811 every dig, every time. You dig?
We've sent that rip van.
And we're back. Garden Mama taking another weekend off. It's really been a pleasure to be with you here last week and today. I love filling in for Garden Mama, and thank you for listening this morning. We appreciate all the wonderful texts and the few phone calls we've gotten. You can reach us and ask your questions at 601-879-4395. That's the C Spire text line, 601-879-4395. Or you can call in at 888-808-8637. 888-808-8637. That's a toll-free number. I wanted to get back to the information about the owl boxes. I tell you that I love putting them on oak trees. Now, they'll nest on a pine tree. They will nest on a plain pole, like a telephone pole, or putting up a 4x4 that's tall enough. But I like to get that box up. I've seen them nest as low as about 5 or 6 feet. But I like to get that box up around that 15-foot, maybe 15 to 20-foot range for a screech owl. And I love having screech owls around. If you put up some floodlights in your backyard and have plenty of places for them to hide and whatnot. My parents had screech owls nest in their backyard for probably 15 years. Beautiful screech owls that came back year after year after year and lived in pine trees in the backyard and on the boxes that they had. And they would fly around at night catching moths that were attracted to those yard floodlights, backyard floodlights. And that's just a wonderful thing to watch them in the backyard and getting to watch all of that. As a forester, I advise my clients and loggers to leave dead snags, and have seen several groups of purple martins using them for nesting. That's from Joe Pettigrew, Jake's dad. I introduced Jake to birding, and Judy Toops took him under her wing. I'll tell you what, Judy took a lot of folks under her wing, and I loved her very, very much. You know what? This question came in last week, and I never got around to it. Can you explain how animals perform murmuration, like birds and fish? Well, for the fish, they've got a little structure that runs all the way down their body called the lateral line. And there are little tiny structures called neuromasts in that lateral line, and they are so sensitive. That's what they use to pick up sound vibrations. Fish actually don't have ears. I love the old saying. When I was a kid, I remember touching my fishing pole to the edge of the boat, and my dad would say, "Shh, don't scare the fish. You'll scare the fish." It actually, they'll jump and they'll take off for 10 or 15 feet, but fish are very curious. They'll actually come back. And I had the opportunity a couple of years ago to go to the Amazon. And in the Amazon, to catch piranha, which is fun, and I, you know, I could find pictures and get them to Lance to put up. To catch the piranha in the Amazon, you literally take your pole and thrash around in the water with the pole, and then drop your hook in. You don't need a bobber. You don't need anything. Just 4 feet of line on a 3 foot stick, and take that 3 foot stick and just thrash on the water, and then throw the meat out there, a little tiny cut cube of beef, and you pull in a piranha. I tell you what, that was some of the most fun I've ever had in my life. And then we took it back to the lodge where we stayed there in the Amazon. We were way up the Amazon. No roads, no streets, no nothing. Just you had to get there by boat. It was fantastic to stay there. We only had electricity for about 6 hours of the day, but it was a great experience. And fishing for piranha was wonderful. So fish do it by the sensitivity, the tremendous sensitivity of that lateral line. As far as birds and the murmurations that take place, I would have to look that up. And I think maybe that was the question that I had last week that I said I needed to look up. And I tell you what, Joe, let me get on that real quick. I just got a text in from somebody very special to me that said that the first screech owl they ever saw was in my parents' backyard. I don't know if she wants me to mention her name on the air or not, but that was her first experience seeing a screech owl. It was in my mom and dad's backyard in Madison.
Is that my cousin Vinny, when he's trying to get to sleep and they're out in the cabin and you have this owl and it's pitch dark. And, you know, he is, and Marissa Tomei have made it out of town. The lawyer gave them the cabin to stay in for some peace and quiet because the train kept coming by. And then the hog pen across from the hotel, the hogs would get loud. So they move out to the cabin. And the first night there, there's a screech owl. I think that's what it is. And it makes the most blood-curling pitch. Oh. And he has no idea what it is.
It's probably not a screech owl.
Okay, well, it was a big owl. I don't know what kind it was.
Big owl, it's more likely to be a barn owl if it's got that screeching pitch. Yeah. I've often wondered why they called the screech owl a screech owl. They've got this very soft... we could play it here. I'll pull it up in just a second. I was looking up to see how the biologists are explaining murmurations. A visual invitation to attract other starlings to join a group night roost. One theory is it's spending the night. Yeah, but how do they do it? I'm going through a whole thing about how they do. How do they coordinate the behavior? They believe the movements are coordinated by starlings observing what others around them are doing. So it's just a visual thing, and their little brain has the ability to keep track of what the birds around them are doing. And it just, whatever's in front does it, and all the others follow along and track their movings. This is fantastic. Says videos of these murmurations and 3D images have revealed that the birds are not as densely packed as they might appear from the ground. So there's room to provide maneuvering, and they're closer to their side neighbors than those in front or behind. So very interesting how that works. There's your screech owl. And that's way loud. You won't ever hear it that loud. Yeah, you get a little whinny like that, and then that soft coo that... Love a screech owl, and it's never as loud as it sounded on the air, I will tell you that. Barn owls, however, are. I have permission to give the name of the person that saw their first screech owl in my mom and dad's backyard, and that is the owner of Jackson's Wild Birds Unlimited. So, Joe, I hope that got your question answered as far as the murmuration. And I needed to look it up for myself as well. I knew about fish. I did not know about the birds. And I'll have to look back on that. The 3D imaging, I'd like to get online sometime when I have some time and look up the 3D imaging on murmurations and how that works. Boy, I just looked at the clock and we're almost out of time. I wanted to spend some time congratulating the folks over in Clinton at the Clinton Nature Center and their wonderful wildflower patch over there. The city of Ridgeland has a wildflower garden right there by the interstate at the Ridgeland exit. They've got a really nice one. Madison has been growing zinnias all along the streets along Madison Avenue and Highway 51 and a couple of other places in the community. They've also got a beautiful pollinator garden that is behind the Strawberry Patch House. And that pollinator garden is actually going to be visited by representatives from America in Bloom next week, and we're really excited about that. I've had a lot of fun these last 2 weeks, folks. I look forward to getting on again sometime when Garden Mama needs a break. And it has been a real pleasure talking with all of you this morning. And I really, really love being with you. Thanks a lot. Goodbye from the Birdman here on Super Talk Radio.
Supertalk.fm and contact Garden Mama anytime at mamaonair@yahoo.com. Thanks for choosing the Garden Mama Show.
Planning a home improvement project? Don't let your dream renovation become a nightmare. Before you hire any contractor, remember these three essential steps. Ask to see their current state license, check their insurance coverage, and always get at least three written estimates. Visit msboc.us to verify credentials and review complaints. Your home deserves a licensed professional because when it comes to construction, cutting corners could cost you everything. Call the Mississippi State Board of Contractors or go to msboc.us to learn more. A message from the Mississippi State Board of Contractors.
Running a business is tough. If you're struggling with HR benefits and payroll, you're not alone. Many businesses just don't have the resources to keep up. That's where MWG Employer Services comes in. We provide a full range of employer services with everything from payroll to benefits to HR services and compliance, and can create a custom plan that fits your needs and budget. We're a Mississippi-based company that can help you focus on what you do best, growing your business. Call MWG Employer Services today at 601-206-7960. Or go to MWG.
Hey, this is Bob.
A Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.